I'm William Googe, a Vuori collaborator and professional ultra runner from the UK. I love to tackle endurance runs around the world, including a 55-day, 3,064-mile run across the US. So I know a thing or two about performance wear. When it comes to relaxing, I look for something ultra versatile and comfy. The Ponto Performance Jogger from Vuori is perfect for all of those things. It's the comfiest jogger I've ever worn. And the Dreamknit fabric is why I'll always reach for them over other joggers. Check them out in the Dreamknit collection by going to vuori.com/William. That's vuori.com/William, where new customers can receive 20% off their first order. Plus, enjoy free shipping in the US on orders over $75 and free returns. Exclusions apply. Visit the website for full terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. It's tax season, and we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's one you need to hear. $16.5 billion. That's how much the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud last year. Now here's a good number. 100 million. That's how many data points LifeLock monitors every second. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it. Guaranteed. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show, Wednesday show, impactful week. We're midway through. Brett Tolman will break down this new judge fair that we're witnessing, the latest way to try to stop Donald Trump and his agenda. We'll talk about how Trump is answering. Also, just keep in mind, you can always get the podcast. If you missed the show live, you want it condensed, you can get the podcast wherever you're comfortable getting podcasts or BrianKilmeadeShow.com. And it's always great to listen to the show. If you go on the road, you leave your local affiliate, you just click on the headsets on the website, on the app, and you'll hear it. And you could actually see the stream also online. You just hit on watch and you just page over from the channel to the business channel to the weather, and then you'll see us. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Why are Democrats full of despair? CNN SRS, 29%. NBC News, you want to go lower than that? How about 27%? The majority of Americans hold an unfavorable or negative view of the Democratic Party at this point.
And that is just the numbers. That's CNN. Dems unmoored. The party is turning on each other and show no ability to learn from their terrible election cycle and the American embrace of the GOP. We examine the latest give and take.
Number two.
You have a lot of guns pointing at each other, and a ceasefire without going a little bit further would have been tough. We had a great call. It lasted almost 2 hours. Talked about a lot of things and toward getting it to peace. And we talked about other things also.
Yeah, they want to play hockey. And it wasn't a 2 hour wait. That's a total misreporting. I talked to Michael Walsh this morning. He said it was 5 minutes, but they did have a 90 minute talk. Through translators, probably cut that in half. Little accomplished as Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump talk about a ceasefire. We see what they accomplished and see how far they have to go, along with Zelensky's response.
Number one.
I want to know more when it comes to the deportations, because deporting illegal immigrants who have committed crimes, I understand that.
Shouldn't be an issue.
So why are folks fighting about gang members being sent away? Like, there are some other deportation cases I'm sure they could be fighting about.
Absolutely, Charlemagne the God on the Breakfast Show. The judge fair is the new thing. It's slowing down the Trump agenda, there's no question, and it's only getting worse. Judges now stopping gangsters from going back to their countries. EPA, green waste, gutting USAID, now not allowed, not allowing transgender to be in the military. That's reversed. We did not elect these judges to run the country or control a president that is just doing his job, in my view. Brett Tolman, I'll ask him legally what's going on. But I'll just give you an idea of what these judges are doing. So the President of the United States put up 261 of the worst of the worst illegal immigrants came to our country wreaking havoc, assaults, rapes, gun crime, killing, whatever. They put them into jumpsuits and they sent them over to El Salvador. Cost is $6 million. El Salvador goes, I have a supermax prison, could use the money, we'll take them. Why Venezuela is not taking them back? I thought we chose not to bring them to Venezuela. I didn't know they were reneging on their pledge to take their idiot, those lunatic people back where they are emptying the prisons and asylums and they are coming here. So a judge just says, no, I don't think so. You turn the plane around. And we said, no, the plane's already in the air and it's going to El Salvador. So now, Monday and Tuesday by 12 o'clock, they got a series of questions that they're asking the Trump administration to answer. What time did the plane take off? When did it leave for U.S. airspace? When did it land in foreign countries? What time were individuals subjected solely to the proclamation transfer of the U.S.? This judge, just know this. Didn't care when the 8 million came in illegally, but they care when they leave legally. So this is not the only case. We had Lee Zeldin on with us last week, and he said, I found $6 billion worth of green contracts that was just pushed out the door because Joe Biden lost the election. They hadn't spent it yet. So he stopped the contracts. Judge goes, no, you can't do that. What do you mean you can't do that? Of course I can do it. I'm running the EPA. It's a waste of money. That's not what I want to do with the money. I either got to give it back to a country $36 trillion in debt, or I'm going to put it to another program. No, you can't. What do you mean you can't? Why am I the EBA director? Why don't you become EBA director? How about this? I'll become a judge and you do my job. Just crazy what's going on. So they got to keep working their way up the ladder. USAID, a lot of these causes are illegitimate, anti-American, anti-State Department causes. And we've had it. Mislabeling, misspending. The president says, we're done with this. I'm going to fold it into the State Department, cut the budget, cut the staff. That's it. Judge goes, no, I don't think he can do that. What do you mean you don't think he can do that? I'm the president of the United States. You could do that. Number one, you got to come to work. These people aren't coming to work. Number two is, that's not the direction we think the country should go in. Foreign policy is not some district judge's district. Or maybe the president should be a district judge for a while. What is this, try on different occupation day? It's not going to happen. But the new label is judge fair. That's how they're trying to stop what's going on. Senator Chris Coons couldn't be happier. Cut six.
I'm not reassured at all. Look, President Trump says one thing and does the other from one week to the next. He said the very first thing he was going to do as president was bring prices down. Instead, he's been slapping tariffs and then pulling them back and then imposing tariffs and then pulling them back, causing increases in prices, chaos in the market. That's just one example of a dozen things, Chris, where he said he'll do one thing.
Right.
And
Chris Coons is such a waste because he had potential to be somewhat of a sober person, a Fetterman-type character, Manchin-type character. So Chris Coons, do you know that gas prices are down? Do you know that inflation's down? Do you know that eggs are down? So at least acknowledge the facts. I'm sorry your buddy, who you replaced, Senator Joe Biden, was a failed vice president, terrible president, and a failed candidate that couldn't get past a debate. But that's not my fault. Stephen Miller knows this is going to be a long fight. Cut nine.
This is settled law. Alien Enemies Act has been on the books and has been upheld for over 200 years. And by the way, the fact that it's a 200-year-old law makes it stronger. This was adopted by the founding generation of our country. The people who wrote the Constitution wrote this law because they understood when America is being invaded by a hostile power, the president is at the height of his authorities to turn back that invasion. Tren de Aragua is arguably the most ruthless, violent, menacing gang, now designated as terrorists. So these are now terrorists, operating in the entire Western Hemisphere, more violent and vicious even than MS-13.
And you know it. El Salvador knows it. Venezuela knows it. And we're sending a message. That video is going to stop the next group of gangsters from coming here. I just got to point out the success. Chris Coons doesn't want to acknowledge it. I don't care. But we know the storming of our border is over for now. We're building the wall as we speak, adding technology as we speak, and stopping the influx thanks to Mexico. Absolutely. Plus, the message is you come here, we're going to arrest you. Your life's going to get worse. You come here with your family. Your family's either going to get broken up or sent back quickly. You know that app that would allow you to come in? Now that app, you can log on and self-deport, and they tell you how. That's how much things have changed. All right, let's fast forward and talk about the talks yesterday. First off, Vladimir Putin, I know, probably doesn't listen to the show, but this is his best opportunity to have somewhat of a normal economy, not have to drag hundreds of thousands of Russian citizens into a war they have no idea why they're fighting. They've lost 700,000 to 800,000 off the battlefield. They have destroyed their economy. Every Western company has left their country. All investment is dried up or frozen overseas. So in comes Trump. This guy wants Ukraine, doesn't really care. He's a dictator. All right, fine. So Trump goes, look, I want Russia and China to be separate. I don't know how this war started. Roughly no. But let's just end it. You're a bad guy, good guy. Doesn't matter. Write the book. Let somebody else do the biography. We're going to end the fighting. We know about the fits and starts and the Oval Office meltdown. We understand it. And we know that how distrustful Vladimir Putin is. We know the track record. But what you got to do is force a dictator to make have no other choice. And circumstances, as I just explained to you, have the sense that Vladimir Putin, although he has some success in the battlefield, is paying a huge price. 45% of all the casualties in the three-year war happened the last year. So things are getting worse for him. Yes, Ukraine's paying a huge price. So they talked for 90 minutes yesterday, and they agree not to a ceasefire, but to not target each other's energy sector, the infrastructure. But guess what they did yesterday? They attacked the infrastructure. President Zelensky posted this on X. Right now, in many regions, you'll literally hear what Russians truly needs, what Russia truly needs. About 40 Shahed drones, which are Iranian, are in the skies. And air defense is active. Unfortunately, there have been hits, especially in the civilian infrastructure. A direct hit by the drone on a hospital in Sumy, strikes in cities of Donetsk, and attack drones currently in the skies over, and they name 6 or 7 or 8 different areas. All right? Zelensky said, today Putin effectively rejected the proposal for a full ceasefire. It would be right for the world to respond by rejecting any attempts to Putin to prolong the war. We're going to hear what Ukraine, Zelensky is going to speak to Trump today. That should go well, sarcastically. And then we're going to have another delegation go back to Saudi Arabia to meet with the Russians again. So today, I don't think it was an amazing success yesterday, but they're talking. Putin should just realize, and Russians should just realize, this is your only opportunity. Nobody else wants to even talk to you. There's no way you're going to disarm Ukraine. There's no way you're going to stop international troops from being in Ukraine. There's no way you're going to stop aid from coming there. There's no way you're going to force an election. So let's see you illegally grab land that doesn't belong to you. And maybe under this agreement, you'll be able to hold on to it, much to my chagrin. Here's Michael Allen, Cut 17.
He certainly has asked for so many different things that are not deliverable at this point, including that Ukraine give up territory that that the Russians don't even have yet, or acknowledge that they'll never get certain pieces of territory back. I don't think the Ukrainians are there quite yet, and I think Trump, as the ultimate leverage player, is going to have to condition Putin over time to give more.
All right, and lastly, for the Democrats, and then I'll come back and take your calls, 1-866-408-7669. Gavin Newsom's got this podcast where he's talking to a lot of Republicans. It's extreme. Michael Savage is extreme. Steve Bannon is an extreme. Charlie Kirk is mainstream, especially with the young next generation of Republican conservatives on campus. And he's doing listening. He's getting a lot of blowback because it looks like he's not challenging people. I have no problem with him doing this. I think it's a good idea. But my problem with Gavin Newsom is a little different. It's not what he's saying. It's not what he says or what he does. For example, giving full Medi-Cal coverage to all illegal immigrants. I think that's a little bit of a mistake, wouldn't you think? I mean, right now, he is asking now for $3 billion for a state health care program that's overwhelmed by illegal immigrants. Why? Because he gave full benefits of Medi-Cal to illegal immigrants because he knew it was the right thing to do, he said. But there's a staggering $6.2 billion in deficit. They were overspent by $6.2 billion. Now he wants a $3 billion loan, and he says his Medi-Cal system is being overwhelmed. Well, because he has now covering with Medi-Cal all income adults ages 26 to 49, regardless of immigration status. That's unaffordable for the country. So the guy that's trying to come off reasonable, talking to Republicans, has got programs that would destroy this nation like it's destroying one of the finest states in the union, California, with all its assets. Energy prices through the roof because he won't drill. Energy prices through the roof because he will do nothing but wind and solar. He will not put any offshore drilling. And he does not want any, by 2030, does not want anything gas-powered coming into his state. All it's doing is jacking up the price of everything, including delivering goods. And when it comes to trans men in women's sports, doing nothing but fighting them in the courts. And even though he's buried in debt and red ink, he is putting $100 million aside to Trump proof his state. Unacceptable. Holman's going in there. There's still a sanctuary state. He's going to start making things miserable for illegal immigrant criminals in that region. So here's Gavin Newsom. Says this is what he recommends Democrats do. Cut 20.
I think it goes back to what we began with, is, and I applaud you for this, is we cannot continue to be on the defense reacting to this. We've got to go on the offense. You got to respect people you disagree with, even, and you can't just dismiss people.
So what are you talking about? Come up with some positive programs, and you don't have to do it in theory. You're still in office. There's another recall movement to get rid of Gavin Newsom. They should forget that. It's a waste of money. He's almost done. But in office, he could make his best case. Hey, guys, I did this program on homelessness. It was a disaster. Here's how I'm changing. Hey, guys, I was too permissive when it came to allowing people to steal $1,000 worth of goods before they're prosecuted beyond a misdemeanor. That was a mistake. I'm changing. Hey, guys, I tried to give Medi-Cal to everybody in the state, 18 to 39, regardless of immigration status, unaffordable. That was a mistake. I have learned. I am the future. Look at what I've changed. Now I'm seeing the red tape as people try to rebuild in Los Angeles. I'm realizing that's red tape all over the state, and I'm going to change that for everyone from San Diego to San Francisco to Sacramento. That's somebody that learned something. But please don't fall for the slickness and the listening tour, because we know what he stands for. And if Democrats want to follow him in words, go ahead. But in actions, you'll go right down Loserville, 1-866-408-7669. He was talking to Tim Walz, by the way. You're not going to believe what that clown says. He is totally not aware what a disaster he was and that his political career is over. Somebody tell him. Don't move.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm Emily Campagno, host of the Fox True Crime Podcast. This week, author Kara Robertson joins me to discuss the chilling story of Lizzie Borden and her sensational trial.
Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Look, Chuck and I disagreed as it relates to the approach and outcome.
I think there is a deep sense of outrage and betrayal. And this is not just about progressive Democrats. This is across the board, the entire party.
I still support Senator Schumer as leader, but I think the only way that we are going to be effective as a caucus is if we change our tactics.
I would have liked to see, when Chuck Schumer had leverage here, to say we need A, B, C, and D for the Democratic Party, and force the Republicans to meet him halfway on those issues.
I myself don't give away anything for nothing. And I think that's what happened the other day.
The second to last cut was Governor Josh Shapiro. I mean, I know he's not in Washington, but can he not figure out that he had no leverage? His leverage was if he built out through the committees a budget when he was in the majority and the Republicans wanted to do a CR, continuing to fund at that level while adding some other things, then at least he could say, I have my fingerprints on it. What he did is essentially do it like an omnibus. Just throw your money in there, put your requests in, pass a budget, give me something out of the House. We're not going to pay attention to it anyway. It's led by a Republican speaker, but instead he's in the minority and lost the White House, and he had no leverage. So you hear what Nancy Pelosi said at the end. She said, I would have put something out there anyway, like a 3-week continuing resolution. And when Republicans rejected it, you could at least say I tried. For what? For what? It's like chasing a ball that's already out of bounds. I mean, do people really think you're hustling? The ball's out of bounds. And it's the antics. I'm not defending Chuck Schumer, but he had no choice. What is your problem? The moment Speaker Johnson defied the odds and the reputation of the Republican caucus, kept everybody together, not named Tom Massey, Chuck Schumer was handed the CR he had to pass or get thorough blame for locking down the government and shutting it down. At which time, Trump would have sat there and said, not funding this, not funding this, not funding this, not funding this, and would have really got to the under the skin of every Democrat. So win the majority back and then blame him. I'm not defending him, but I just can't believe these are like temper tantrums from people that are just irrational. Brett Tolman next.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is what Donald Trump does in life, right? And you see him exploring the threshold of ignoring a court order.
The issue that's at stake here is the idea that perhaps this administration actually ignored a judicial order. That is deeply disturbing.
We live in a society of rule of law. Supreme Court has its power. Judges have their power. And it should frighten every American, whether you're conservative or progressive, that you have a president who does not respect our Constitution and wants more and more power for himself.
I think he's shown almost too much respect for the law, so-called law and order, because these judges are being activists. But Bernie Sanders, his unmistakable voice in the same tenor, always outraged, always ridiculous. Donald Trump has got to be stopped. And Jim Himes, desperate to matter over in Connecticut. What were we talking about? Judge Fair. Who's cracking down on President Trump everywhere you can, whether it's keeping transgenders out of the military, USAID being brought down to size or folded in to the State Department. Now we have the EPA being denied the ability to get rid of $6 billion worth of green fraudulent contracts. And now the latest, stopping the worst of the worst, TDA and MS-13 from going to El Salvador. A judge decided to turn, told them to turn the plane around. They said, tough, we're not going to do that. Now 2 days of questions got to be answered by noon over the next 2 days. I'm personally insulted that a district judge thinks he can hold the State Department and a presidency hostage. But Brett Tolman is the legal expert. He's the executive director for the Right on Crime, former U.S. attorney himself for the District of Utah, Brett Tolman. Brett, your thought about Donald Trump and his new war with judges.
Yeah, Brian, this is an era that I don't think any of us really hoped would come to the country. I think this is one in which we see judges were waiting in the wings to actually tear apart the executive branch and the executive authority that the president has. And look, these are all district court judges that have jurisdiction, limited jurisdiction in their district. And they're issuing these nationwide injunctions. That's the stuff that's got to stop. The Supreme Court obviously has to step up and make the right decisions. But I don't blame the president at all for pursuing the full extent of the executive power that he has. Right now we have judges stepping in the place of our cabinet, in charge of the Homeland Security, in charge of the State Department, in charge of the Justice Department. Where does it stop if we don't stop them now?
So how unique is this? Why haven't other courts stopped other presidents? I mean, the amount of injunctions that Trump is dealing with now almost is equal to what we've dealt with since the 1960s. I mean, in total. So, like, why are the judges suddenly realizing that they have this power, or are they asserting power they shouldn't have?
I think if we look at history, you saw resentment building quite dramatically since Merrick Garland and pulling down his nomination to be on the Supreme Court. I think you saw an influx of appointments of district court, so the lowest level, but still a federal district court judge. And I think they were waiting and anticipating that this was our last line of defense if for some odd reason President Trump gets elected, which they did not believe, and they used everything from lawfare to an assassination attempt, and he's in. So now this is their last line of defense.
Well, how effective is it? As people have pointed out, that there's no district courts in the Constitution. So now you got this district court judge continuing to harangue the Justice Department about the next shipment of illegal aliens, criminal illegal aliens out of the country. And I'm just thinking from the pedestrian point of view, if the judge is saying, you know, well, of course we could lock up illegal alien criminals, and of course we could send them back to their own countries, but he wants to know who they are. But do they get due process?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because Paul Cassell is the judge in Utah who wrote the opinion on what rights do illegals have, and they do not have the same constitutional rights that we do. They have limited due process rights That's good law still, and it stands to this day. And I guess we have to let them pursue this to some degree until the Supreme Court is willing to step up. But I think, look, Biden didn't adhere to the rule of law. Biden ignored rulings. He used his executive, you know, his executive power to pursue it even after the Supreme Court issued rulings. That's different than what's happening here. What's happening here are exclusively executive branch action being taken by the executive branch, with a federal judge now saying, no, you can't do that.
So when you say limited, that's where the interpretation comes in, right? Limited, you know, constitutional rights or due process. That's where each judge gets to put in their own opinion. Am I correct?
You're right, Brian. I mean, to the extent that illegals come into this country, they do not get – they're not afforded the same Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendment rights that we have. The question becomes, what is the – what do we allow police to do? So the limitation is more on police than it is in protecting an individual who does not have constitutional rights. So that becomes the analysis, is what did the police do? Did they have reasonable suspicion? Did they have probable cause to make these arrests? And here – when an individual is arrested for being an illegal and they have a prior conviction, that's a case in which this country, all throughout history except under Biden, has uniformly sent them back to their countries after they've served any prison time that's applicable.
So what happens now, Brett? I know a lot of this is unplowed ground. I get it. So now this judge is asking, still trying to unwind what happened over the weekend. What time did the plane take off? When did it leave the U.S. airspace? When did it land on the foreign country? They're going to use FlightAware to decide if this was actually true or not. How many people were aboard solely on the basis of the proclamation ordered by the judge? So it's 261, 100 plus. The ones that the judge really wants to focus on six, evidently, that might not have been part of TDA. So we're going to try to put up another group in chains and on a plane and send them back to El Salvador. What will ultimately be the decision made by what judge? And when does – this is an Obama judge, by the way, whose wife is a left-wing activist. Can't control your wife, but you kind of indication of where you go. So left-wing activist was crying after Hillary Clinton lost, famously. So where do you go if you are the Trump team?
So you push the envelope because you have the authority to do it. You send back. You continue to send the planes. If he issues
and okay,
you do. You send that. You make him try to hold you in contempt, and then you appeal it. If they don't want to go that route and they want to immediately appeal an injunction that they believe, you know, is preventing them from doing that. But remember, Brian, under the law that they are utilizing in order to immediately send these folks back, this is a law that is not justiciable, meaning the courts cannot review the president's power under it. It is blanket power, not reviewable, given to the president. So do you send a message that you're willing to be, cornered by a judge who's outside his authority? I think that's the stuff they're balancing right now. But they're more concerned about the safety of this country, and they have the authority to do it. So I expect they'll send the planes. They'll continue to send the planes, and then they'll appeal any rulings that this judge issues.
So here's an example. And most of these senators and congressmen, most of them are lawyers. So listen to Chris Coons. They're warning, and of course it's all political, that Trump can't defy a court order. If a court tells you to do something, cut six.
I'm not reassured at all. Look, President Trump says one thing and does the other from one week to the next. He said the very first thing he was going to do as president.
I'm sorry, cut seven. Let's just cut seven. Yeah.
The issue is whether or not federal court orders will be followed by President Trump, and whether that's on firing folks who work at the Veterans Administration or eliminating USAID or deporting people. That's less the issue than whether or not this longstanding core pillar of the United States and our system will be respected by the Trump administration. Of course, they're picking one of the least sympathetic cases possible to push the very limits of their power. But we in the Senate are clear about what it is they're doing. And I think in the courts, and what you just heard from Chief Justice Roberts, makes it clear that they, too, are clear about what he's doing.
What he's doing is he's trying to do executive orders to take action. But Justice Roberts was coming on something different. He was saying you can't go impeach a judge because you don't like his decision. That's different from what all these other decisions that Chris Coons ran through. Your thoughts on this, on the posturing?
Well, Brian, let's say that a district court judge, issued an injunction preventing the president of the United States from flying on Air Force One. They can do it. He could put that out. Does the president follow it? Or
no.
Does the president get on Air Force One?
Yeah.
Exactly. This is what the judges are doing. This is not a matter of issuing a ruling that should be reviewed and that the Justice Department is, you know, not sure whether they have the authority or not to proceed. No, this is not. This is an injunction against the president of the United States exercising his exclusive authority under the executive branch.
So if you work for Trump right now, you would say, Mr. President, do it. We'll answer these questions. We'll deal with the judge. You just keep loading up those planes.
You just keep loading them up. The American people want this. These are clearly individuals who are not, it's not just unsympathetic. These are criminals that have raped and killed people in the United States by crossing our borders illegally. It's an invasion. There's no question it's an invasion. He has extreme powers under such circumstances. And the district court judges are going to have to remember that they have to have jurisdiction and they have to have the law and the facts in order in front of them in order to issue a ruling. And they don't have it in this instance. It's a totally different circumstance.
So listen to this. The judge has barred Trump's EPA, Lee Zeldin, director, from taking back $20 billion in climate grants. The ruling orders EPA and climate groups to return to court to argue about the fate of the money. So this is, guess who? U.S. District Court Judge Tanya Chutkan, who was desperate to prosecute Donald Trump on one of those Jack Smith cases. So desperate, she was going to put off a vacation last year in order to do it. Now she has a chance to stop him from getting rid of these green programs. So here's the scenario. Joe Biden put forth these programs. In comes a new administration. They go, I don't want these programs. I don't want wind and solar. I want natural gas and I want to do more drilling, offshore oil drilling. Who's right?
We didn't hear a peep from judges when Biden shut down drilling, when he shut down pipelines, when he shut down the coal industry. We didn't hear anything from judges reversing that policy, knowing that that's better for the country and for our energy demands. We didn't hear anything. Now we're hearing from them because they're upset that Donald Trump is trying to restore balance to this country and get the idiocy of bad policy making that came as a result of a geriatric president who didn't have the mental capability to understand what the country needed and was guided by those handlers around him. That's what's happening in this country. I hope we immediately start to see reversals and the judges get shut down appropriately so in the near future.
All right, Brett Tolman, thanks so much. Appreciate it. I did not think
thanks,
we'd be
Brian.
Talking so much about legal cases, but at least we're not talking about Trump personally this time. But now it's all about the things that he's doing, not him personally. So.
He's doing too much, Brian. He's
I know.
Getting too much done.
How dare he? Thanks, Brett. 1-866-408-7669. Brian Kilmeade Show. Hey, I'm going to be able to squeeze in some calls. I also am getting some good emails from you, BrianKilmeade.com. And a quick note as we go to break, it's coming up this Saturday. I can't believe it. In St. Louis at the Factory. Now Fox Nation, let it be known. We're going to be streaming it live. But for people in the area, I want to meet you personally. VIP opportunities almost capped out. This is the biggest venue we've ever played. History, Liberty, and Laughs. We bring history to life, motivational, inspirational, and of course, about the biggest political comeback in American history. And we're living it right now.
Illuminating, intriguing, inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
This episode is brought to you by Bluehost. You might not be a tech genius, but you want the website for your business to crush it. Thankfully, Bluehost makes it easy. Customized, optimized, and monetized. Everything exactly how you want with AI. Your site can be up within minutes, and the search engine tools even help you get more site visitors. Whatever your passion project is, set it up with Bluehost. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, what have you got to lose? Head to Bluehost.com to start now.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We cannot continue to be on the defense reacting to this. We've got to go on the offense. We got to meet people where they are. You got to respect people you disagree with. Even, and you can't just dismiss people.
This How notion do you fight of, it?
It's, and well, this notion
think
of
I
text.
Can kick most of their I do want to do. I know I can run them, but I don't know if we're going to fall into that place where we want to.
Okay, we challenge you to a WWE fight here type of thing.
I mean, Tim Walz, are you crazy? I mean, what's with the cursing over the last few weeks for Democrats? Just blatantly cursing. Some actually put it in their teleprompter. And then Governor Tim Walz is having a conversation with a very friendly conversation with Gavin Newsom on his podcast. How do you fight them? I could fight them. I think they can kick their blank. I mean, number one, he's not Mr. Masculinity. The problem with Tim Walz, he has no self-awareness. Does he not know what a joke he is nationally? How he let the whole party down? How most of his biographical story was total fallacy? How we still haven't figured out what the hell he was doing in China with those children on his honeymoon? Why he repeatedly went back and forth? How he was first a championship football coach, then a position coach for 1 year, volunteer. Everything about his story fell apart. He took weapons of war. Tim Walz, it turns out, turned down an opportunity to lead his unit to war and was looked at as somebody who abandoned his unit, but he ran on taking weapons of war into war when he never got as far any further than Italy. And now he's acting like a tough guy with Gavin Newsom, thinking he's got a shot at being the standard bearer for a defeated party, which he had everything to do with them losing. I mean, nobody could believe how fortunate Republicans were when Kamala Harris picked him. Gary in Daytona. Hey, Gary.
Hey, Brian. I'm really want to see Cash Patel and Pam Bondi. I heard a couple of their statements about the attack on the dealerships and the Tesla and the attack on Elon Musk. I want to see the enthusiasm that they prosecuted J6 people with search warrants when they catch these people.
Absolutely.
Looking into it.
And let's find out who's behind it. Because you heard Elon yesterday. He believes ActBlue is behind it, which is a left-wing super PAC.
There's no way it's a five-year minimum for doing what they're doing. Sooner or later, someone's going to get hurt and it'll enhance the crime and to 15 or 20 years in jail when the EMT or firefighter gets hurt, and they need to bury these people and find out what's going on.
I hear you, Gary. And by the way, he's just cutting government costs. Why is he enemy number one? Dave in Rochester, New York. Dave.
Yes, Brian. How are you this morning?
Great. What's on your mind?
Listen, I listened to some things that you had to say on the Five last week. I'm here to try and explain to you how a reorganization of the healthcare system will cut the deficit.
Real quick,
will eliminate the deficit without cutting Medicaid. I can do that.
All right, do you want to give me an idea? Just real quick, a couple bullet points.
I am the architect of United States Universal System. I used to be an ASO specialist back in the 90s.
And where do we go for your website to find out more?
Yes. Basically, Clinton was...
Unfortunately, Dave, I'm up against it. That's a long program, but I appreciate the insight. Thanks for listening and watching me on The Five.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for this moment. Thanks for being here. I'm at 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Glad you're where you're at, driving around in your car or listening on your AirPods. I appreciate it. This hour is going to be important. Cliff May is going to be with us. I don't really know too many people know more about the next weapon system in the Middle East, the vulnerabilities of the Iranians, the need to act, what's happening in Gaza, what's the challenges over in Ukraine. Cliff May is going to be with us. And Kevin Zinger will be here. You probably don't know of him, but we'll know soon. He's got a company that he founded, Divergent 3D. He's the founder, and he'll be in studio, and it might be our one way to catch China and surpass everybody using modern-day technology and 3D printing to move our weapon systems and our armed forces forward. So there's a lot going on today, too. We also know that, J.D. Vance had to cancel his event. He was going to have an event on Long Island, but he has postponed it. But the Fed is going to talk today. They're going to have a news conference. Why do you care? It's going to affect your wallet, your interest rates, what you're paying on your adjustable loan, maybe for your house. That'll be at 2:30 this afternoon. Then he's going to have a press conference afterwards. So he's going to first make some announcements. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Why are Democrats full of despair? CNN SRS, 29%. NBC News, you want to go lower than that? How about 27%? The majority of Americans hold an unfavorable or negative view of the Democratic Party at this point.
CNN so-called polling experts, Dems unmoored at this hour. The party turning on each other and show no ability to learn from their terrible election cycle. And the Americans are embracing the GOP. They can't figure out why. We'll tell you the latest.
Number two.
You have a lot of guns pointing at each other, and a ceasefire without going a little bit further would have been tough. We had a great call. It lasted almost 2 hours. Talked about a lot of things and toward getting it to peace. And we talked about other things also.
And by the way, it's not true that Vladimir Putin kept Donald Trump waiting. It was about 5 to 10 minutes, according to someone in the room. 90-minute talk. Little accomplished as Putin and Trump talk about a ceasefire, but he does not sign on, even though Ukraine has. We'll discuss it.
Number one.
I want to know more when it comes to the deportations, because deporting illegal immigrants who have committed crimes, I understand that.
Shouldn't be a problem, right? Shouldn't be an issue.
So why are folks fighting about gang members being sent away? Like, there are some other deportation cases I'm sure they could be fighting about.
Exactly. Charlemagne the God gets it. Judge Fair is all in. It is the new lawfare, and that's slowing down the Trump agenda, and it's only getting worse. Judges now stopping gangsters from going back home to their home countries and go to prison. EPA, green agenda, it can't get stopped because a judge, I guess, signs on to it. Gutting USAID is now on hold, and now this anti-American agenda can continue to flourish. What's going on here? Should district judges be controlling our foreign policy? And for me, that answer is pretty deliberate and pretty obvious. Absolutely not. What am I talking about? 261 known gang members from other countries committed assaults, various robberies and rapes and more. Well, let out of prison, put in chains, put in white jumpsuits, put on a plane and flown into El Salvador. Well, in the middle of this, we find out a judge says, well, the ACLU has a problem with it. Democracy Now! Has a problem with it. What is this case? Well, we don't think they've gotten their due process. Turn the plane around. Turn the plane around. We're not turning the plane around. It's not going to happen. Now, the judge has spent the last 2 days asking the federal government to provide a timeline and explain why they couldn't turn the plane around. And they want to stop all these deportations. Even though they're criminals, they don't belong here. It's okay to come here under Joe Biden, but we can't send them out under Donald Trump. This is not just the 261 illegal aliens. This is also Lee Zeldin trying to stop $6 billion worth of green energy loans that are handed out and grants that have been deliberated. He doesn't want to do it. It's not the policy of this administration. It is not practical. Joe Biden never thinks things out, and nothing was ever followed through. So the new EPA director wants to make a decision. A judge says no. USAID folded into the State Department, taken down. A judge says, no, you can't do that. Really? Transgenders in the military. Our new Secretary of Defense doesn't want to do it. A judge says you have to leave them. That, to me, doesn't sound like the policy debate that we really elected in this country. It sounds like a judge appointed by Biden, appointed by Obama, who wants to stop Trump. Instead of trying to get him personally, bankrupt him individually, now they're trying to stop him through the court system, let alone what's happening to his right-hand man, Elon Musk, the modern-day Benjamin Franklin Henry Ford. Tesla is now the target of, I think, an organized effort to make every owner want to give up the car, whether you love Trump or not. And that is graffitiing it if it's in a parking lot, blowing it up if it's in it's on a car lot, maybe rallying, protesting in front of a Tesla dealership, or breaking through the glass, or just spray painting Nazi everywhere. It's happening in Las Vegas. It's happening around the country. They have targeted attack. It's posted on social media. A lot of people feel this is Act Blue, and other organized Democrats who don't like the fact that he's cutting in, not indiscriminately, but without political bias to get our fiscal house in order. And it's upsetting a lot of people who are living off the government. And for me, I love what he's doing. Maybe you love what you're doing if you're a Republican. If you're a Democrat, you don't like it because guess what? Barack Obama promised to do it. Bill Clinton promised to do it. But this guy is actually doing it under President Trump. Here's Elon Musk last night, Cut 32.
It's really come as quite a shock to me that there is this level of really hatred and violence from the left. I always thought the left, you know, Democrats were supposed to be the party of empathy, the party of caring, and yet they're burning down cars, they're firebombing dealerships, they're firing bullets into the dealerships, they're just, you know, smashing up Teslas. Tesla is a peaceful company. We've never done anything harmful. I've never done anything awful. I've only done productive things. So I think we just have a deranged. There's some kind of mental illness thing going on here because this doesn't make any sense.
They want him to back out. They want him to stop. And I really hope he doesn't. He does not a quitter. He goes in there and he understands how to lean out machines, workplaces, corporations. Started from the ground up. He understands how to overcome failure, understands how to scale obstacles. That's his whole story. If you hear about SpaceX, you might be in awe of what they're doing now, but you have to see the way they started. They were one rocket explosion away from going bankrupt, and he was able to put a rocket together within 3 months by finding scraps across the country, going back to the Marshall Islands, and proving to his investors that he could pull it off by having a successful launch. By 2020, he's putting people into the sky. He's putting astronauts into orbit and to the space station. Then we stop writing literally billion-dollar checks to the Russians. He has 16 crewed missions, 11 for NASA, 4 commercial customers. Overall, as I mentioned, 14 total trips back and forth to the space station. We watched it all because those two astronauts were stranded in space, but you would think that would be enough. Tesla increasing it, new car company, making it sleek, making it better, making it autonomous, always pushing the lever. It's trying to do it with cabs now, trying to do tunnels underneath cities in order to avoid traffic. Done it in Las Vegas, already limitedly successful, putting chips in brains to help the paralyzed walk. And you made him enemy number one? Cut 33.
It turns out when you take away people's, the money they're receiving fraudulently, they get very upset. And they basically want to kill me because I'm stopping their fraud. And they want to hurt Tesla because we're stopping this terrible waste and corruption in the government. And, I guess they're bad people. Bad people will do bad things.
And people think that he's rattled. He's not rattled. That's the way he speaks. If you watch him with Joe Rogan, he's not rattled. If you watch him with Larry Kudlow, he's not rattled. That's the way he speaks. He speaks and he thinks. You might, I've met him 3 times, talked to him on the phone once. I don't think he knows who the hell I am. Not that that matters, but just so you know. I don't have no affinity to him, but I'm just in awe of who he is and understand this is a generational intellect. But the way he delivers things, he actually thinks. So he'll pause and it acts like he's stuck or he's got a stutter. But I don't even know what it's like to be this smart. Many people don't. But he will stop and come up with revelations. Evidently, when he's inventing things or trying to solve problems, he will just lock up and stare, almost like in a trance. He'll snap out of it, be calm, and he's got a plan. When he does interviews, people think he's panicking, he's got some type of problem. It's just his brain. It's amazing, right? And now they're trying to destroy him. He's got amazing security, like a president almost. They're trying to take out the things. I worry about people getting into SpaceX and trying to sabotage some of his rockets. I worry about them sabotaging some of the Teslas. Make the autonomous vehicle all of a sudden go off. They hack into it. They've already hacked into some of the Tesla computers and are putting vile things on those flat screens. All because he wants to lean out the government and he works for Donald Trump with. Listen, when we come back, Kevin Zinger will be with us too. He's got a cutting edge company called Diversion 3D. You're going to love hearing about his background from the Marines to his days at Yale. Don't move.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So with me right now is somebody you probably haven't met but will know a lot about, and maybe you'll be hearing about his company. Kevin Zinger's with us now from Divergent 3D, and he is the founder. He's had a remarkable career to now. You mentioned working class guy from Cleveland, ends up playing Division I football, a law degree from Yale, goes into the Marines, correct?
That's correct.
And then along the way has become a very successful businessman. But what are you doing now that you hope that the government takes notice of, because you could catch us right up to China, especially when it comes to defense?
So,
and manufacturing.
You know, as you mentioned, I grew up blue collar in Cleveland. I saw policies over the last couple of decades, especially, that have wiped out a great part of that industrial base that we have, shipped it to China.
The whole Rust Belt.
Yes. And, you know, if you look at President Trump's current policies to bring back traditional manufacturing, they are spot on. What we're doing at Divergent is really enabling a technology leapfrog that complements that, bringing back traditional manufacturing. And we're doing that by scaling a network of fully digital factories across the U.S. that allow for AI-based automated engineering and manufacturing of industrial structures, everything from hypercars to cruise missiles, doing that faster, better, and cheaper than anywhere else on the planet. And that's how we reindustrialize.
Fundamentally, is 3D printing?
3D printing is one element. What I'd say is you first need AI to take a set of design requirements, generate a perfect structure. Then, because that structure is in three dimensions, the only way to materialize it is through 3D printing. We've had to develop our own 3D printers because there are no commercially available printers that meet the rate and the quality and the cost. So we've built our own printers, and you don't have a full digital system unless you have something that's like a 3D printer except for assembly.
So, for example, you need a contract, and you're just saying that traditionally we're not going to catch China if we go about manufacturing traditionally. We have to find a way to leapfrog them. And you believe your technology will leapfrog China.
Yes. And what I would say is there is no technological barrier today to doing that. This is fully commercialized. So today we have six major auto brands that have production programs with us. So Aston Martin has cars out on the road.
Are you building the whole car or just portions of the car?
We build today part of the car. We build the key safety and performance structures, frames, suspension systems, engine components. But over time, you're going to be able to generate most of that vehicle very quickly with very little CapEx, print it anywhere on the planet, and assemble it anywhere
on
the planet.
So you have the elite, like McLaren. You have the elite cars, these sports cars. You have the contracts for them. But what do you do different that makes it sense to go to your company to build these cars? What in America, where we hear labor is so high and costs are so high that we were told that it's almost impossible to build here?
Using traditional manufacturing, those arguments have some merit. I will give an example on the aerospace and defense side. 2.5 years ago, General Atomics, the San Diego defense company that makes our Predator and Reaper drones, these very large, sophisticated drones, came to us and said, Defense Department wants smaller, more affordable unmanned air, land, sea, and space vehicles. They provided us with an initial design they had for an unmanned, couple meter long vehicle. Within a two-month period of time, we redesigned, manufactured, and delivered a fully digital version of that. That reduced the number of parts from 184 to 4. It reduced the cycle time from 12 days to 18 hours to build each one. Right. It reduced the weight of it by 5%, so extended the range. It reduced variable cost, per unit cost, depending on volume, from 30 to 60% versus traditional manufacturing. And it reduced development cost by over 50%. That is a total flat-out game changer.
So are you trying to get the White House's attention?
I think we have the White House's attention. What I really think we as a country need in order to make sure that we're not defeated by the Chinese is take this system and as rapidly as possible replicate it across the American manufacturing base.
Is it affordable? Is it more affordable too?
Yes. As I said, we on that General Atomics system have 30 to 60% less variable cost per unit cost than traditional manufacturing.
You think you can, Kevin, you think you can build rockets, you think you build missile defense systems and planes, tanks, everything. You think you could do it quicker and more efficiently?
That is a fact that has already happened.
If so you talk think the Pentagon's got to give you a contract, right?
With defense primes, like the Lockheed Martins of the world, the Northrops of the world,
working
the
Raytheons,
we already have defense contracts
with them. So you're working
with them. We work with them. What the U.S. needs to do is take this from our having proven, if you go talk to Lockheed or you talk to the McLaren CEO or you talk to Bugatti or Mercedes, they know it works. We have to go from our tactically building our company to President Trump, who's trying to bring back manufacturing, viewing this as a secular strategic scale up.
You know, the NATO General Secretary was here and he urged the president to do a Defense Production Act. He said, because our allies need weapons from us, but we can't make them quick enough because our industrial base has shrunk. Are you the answer to this problem?
Yes. And what I would say is I just spoke at the Munich Security Conference. The chair of that conference, Paul Achleitner, reached out to me and actually said, I need to get you together with Mark Rutte. I just spoke to his chief of staff last week. He's spot on. President Trump's spot on. The only thing that keeps this from happening now, and it needs to happen now, is attention plus willpower.
Wow, it's very exciting, Kevin. I got to go check out your manufacturing base over in Torrance.
Please,
Kevin,
welcome
Zinger.
That.
Check them out, Divergent 3D. Where can we? What website do we see to see your stuff?
Divergent3D.com.
Great to meet you, Kevin. Thanks
great
for continuing
you,
to get back to the country, not only in the Marines, but now with this manufacturing at a time we critically need it.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This was an important historic call that only President Trump could pull both sides together. He's going from one side to the other. Our negotiators are going from one side to the other. And we are driving both sides closer and closer. Lawrence, even the NATO Secretary General of NATO said, President Trump, you broke the logjam. And everybody agrees now, it's not if the war ends, we're debating how the war ends.
So that is Michael Waltz 2 hours ago talking about the phone call with Vladimir Putin. Just the beginning, no one expected him to say, hey, ceasefire, never thought of that. What a great idea. Sounds good. Got to run. But what he did say, they agreed to two things. They agreed to exchange prisoners, and they agreed, not all, but they also agreed to stop hitting each other's energy, okay? But then Zelensky pointed out last night they hit each other's energy and some infrastructure. Cliff May is a founder and president of the Foundation for Defensive Democracies and a columnist for The Washington Times and a host of the Foreign Policy Podcast. Cliff, your thoughts about what's emerged from the meeting yesterday?
Is disappointing. And I hope President Trump and his advisors will recognize that. Vladimir Putin did not negotiate in good faith. He also did a couple of things that were sending a message, and I want to point this out. He kept Trump waiting for this phone call for about an hour while he had a meeting with his oligarchs. He was told, you know, you're late for this phone call. He said, yeah, essentially let him wait. And the other day when Stephen Witkoff was there, Stephen Witkoff was made to cool his heels for 8 hours while Putin met with Alexander Lukashenko, the president of Belarus, which is a vassal state. What Putin wants is not war. What Putin wants is victory. And victory to him means Ukraine becomes either a colony or a vassal state, or he may settle, and this may be the best that can be done, for taking about 20% of Ukrainian territory and Crimea for sure, and then the conflict freezes. That's probably the best that can be done. But in order to get to a better place than where we are now, President Trump needs to play the cards he has. He likes that metaphor. He has the better cards, but he has to play them, and he has to put some serious pressure on Putin, or Putin will not give an inch.
Right. And I think, okay, we're not going to hit infrastructure. But here's the thing. He's got to put leverage back on him, whether it's the money that's frozen or whether it's the promise to flood more weapons into Ukraine who do not want to quit fighting. And that's great leverage. You know, Ukraine's not asking for a ceasefire. We're asking Ukraine to have a ceasefire. So he go, look, I can't control these guys. And there's no way he should ever agree not to put foreign troops into the country because the hard part's done. The Europeans say they won't. They want to do it. So that'll be the tripwire.
That's exactly right. What this requires now is real pressure. President Trump has threatened on an.
I think we're going in and out. And by the way,
it's devastating. And that's absolutely right. But now he has to put that pressure on. This is not going to be easy.
It's not going to be easy. Now it's a start to go back and forth. Now they're going to talk to Zelensky. My hope is, Cliff, that they're not going to try to get a deal done because we don't even have the parameters yet to get a deal done. It's not even close to being ready. We also know this, that the one thing about waiting, I talked to Michael Walsh this morning. I said, is it true they let you wait for an hour? And he said, where'd you read that? I said, it's everywhere. Yeah. He said, 5 minutes.
Yeah, not quite. No, Putin wants to win this. Putin wants to, I'm afraid, show that he's the stronger player. Putin is a very tough guy. We've talked about this before, Brian. He wants to restore the Russian Empire. He's the czar, and he wants to give nothing. If you put pressure on him, he probably will go for a ceasefire because very competent military analysts say he is running out of ammunition. His economy is suffering. And by the way, he doesn't have enough bodies to lay down to get additional inches of Ukrainian territory. So push him hard. He'll accept a ceasefire. But that means sanctions, really serious sanctions. My organization has a whole list of them that can be implemented immediately. Get the Europeans to do the same. And everything else that you said is right, too. Additional arms flow to Ukraine and lift some restrictions on their use, targeting Russian military targets inside Russia.
Well, no longer allowing the exemption to let the Europeans buy their oil. That certainly helps the Ukrainians' cause. I want you to hear what else Michael Waltz said. Cut 16.
It's not a matter of whether you necessarily believe. This is trust but verify. Yeah. This is tough negotiation. Putin's a tough character. We have no illusions about who we're dealing with. But both sides, it's in their interest to end the killing, to end the massive loss of lives and treasure and materiel, and play this forward a year, 2, 3 years. You know, how does this end except World War I style grinding warfare with World War III escalation consequences? It's in all sides' interest to stop it, and that's what we're driving towards.
So I guess it's a first step. They're going to talk to Ukrainians today. But the one thing that Putin's got to watch, which he might not fully realize, because he says some things that shows you he does not understand the American culture. If he starts clearly embarrassing Trump and not giving it all and saying Ukraine can't be refunded and they got to have elections, and he's not budging, Trump will be your worst enemy because you can't even pretend that that's a good deal. If he agrees to any of those things, let alone all of it, everybody would be laughing at him, including those on his right. I don't think Mike Waltz and Secretary Rubio would be able to sign off on it.
I think that's absolutely right. You've got to recognize what Putin is attempting to do here, and he is going to, and you're going to have to play hardball against him at this point. And the best you can get probably is a frozen conflict. Look, we've frozen the conflict between North and South Korea for 53 years. That's an example. The Soviet Union tried to pull Finland into the Soviet Union, into the Russian Empire back in 1939. How did it end? 11% of Finland's territory was taken by Russia, but Finland retained its independence. All I want at this point is for Ukraine to remain a sovereign, independent political entity and culture, because what Trump does not want to happen is to see in Kyiv what we saw in Kabul when Biden pulled out.
Absolutely. So the other thing to keep in mind too, and you know, people are saying that Trump's leaving NATO and all these things, and he is upset with the organization. He felt it was unbalanced. We've gotten educated, yeah, and he's much more right than not right. But I talked to the general secretary on and offline. He thinks that Trump's his best salesman because he's willing to step back. And now we see the German government, legit, even though it hasn't been formed yet, voting to put $100 billion into their defense. France, Macron, UK, all these Western allies suddenly realize, even though they're saying disparaging things about us subtly and directly, they're doing what we want. And that says learn to defend themselves.
That's exactly right. And you mentioned this, both the French and the British have said we're willing to send peacekeepers. That means uniformed soldiers after we get some kind of ceasefire. Of course, Putin doesn't want that. Of course, Putin's demands are that Ukraine be weakened so he can fire a kill shot. But this is a good time to have the Europeans take the lead on a couple of things. Peacekeepers, as you say, the $300 billion or so of Russian funds that are frozen, use them for reparations, use them for a rearmament for Ukraine. And now America and its allies can work together to get a ceasefire. Mm-hmm. But Putin's not going to do this easily. You're going to have to play hardball. You're going to have to play the cards you have.
Right, Cliff, let's go to another area of your expertise, okay, in the Middle East. Houthi rebels over the weekend took some serious hits from the U.S., killed about 53, but a lot of them were commanders, Houthi commanders. So we're not aiming for missile launchers. We're aiming for people. Did we make, from your estimation, did we make progress, do some damage? Because the Houthi rebels the next day sent drones after ships. And then yesterday, I understand, sent a missile into Israel.
They tried to send it into Israel. I think it landed in the Sinai by mistake. Yes, we're making progress there. Yes, this is very good. The Biden administration's strategy, if you can call it that, was to shoot at the arrows coming down, like over 170 missiles at Navy ships and about 145 at commercial ships. You don't want to shoot the arrows. You want to shoot the archers. And that's what we're doing now. Shooting the archers makes a big difference. Also, an intelligence ship run by Iran was sunk to the bottom of the Red Sea. So the Houthis don't have very good targeting information now, so their missiles are not going to hit.
So this that's a true story? We were trying to get that verified.
I think I understand that's true. I think I've got good reports on that. I think that's true. We can do more to confirm. Also, Trump has rightly said, the administration has rightly said, that at some point that we are going to hold the Iranians responsible because they're making the arrows and sending them to the Houthis. They're denying it, but it's true. Rubble one factory where missiles and drones are being made for export to the Houthis, and you will make a big statement. This is also a message to the Islamic Republic of Iran saying we will use military force and we do not accept the possibility that you will become nuclear armed. If Iran becomes nuclear armed and it's in an alliance, a firm alliance with Russia, with China, with North Korea, they're cooperating militarily, diplomatically, politically, economically. That's an axis of aggressors that is really dangerous, and that has to be stopped.
Do you think that Iran doesn't fully understand that they have no missile defense, that Israel is more now prepared than ever to finish the job on their nuclear reactor, and now has 2,000-pound bombs to do some serious damage? Do they not fully understand what Israel is capable of yet?
They understand it. They knew that the Biden administration wouldn't permit Israel to do that. They hope that Trump won't. The U.S. could destroy or at least set back by years the nuclear weapons development project that Tehran has within about 24 hours. The Israelis, it would take them a week or two, but they could do it with U.S. backing. They don't have the same bombs, they don't have the same planes, but it can be done. And there's about a six-month window in order to do that, while the Islamic Republic of Iran is vulnerable because of what the Israelis did before, knocking out their S-300 defense systems and that. And those systems, of course, come from Russia. Again, for the war in Ukraine, Russia is getting bodies and munitions from North Korea, getting drones and missiles from the Iranians, and getting dual-use technology from the Chinese. This war is a world war in a certain sense. And Putin does not want to be humiliated. He does not want to be beaten. And he thinks he can beat Trump. And Trump has to show that's not the case. Because believe me, Xi Jinping is watching. Kim Jong-un is watching. Ali Khamenei is watching.
President Xi is supposed to come to Mar-a-Lago, I believe, as early as April. Cliff May, fascinating time. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. My pleasure.
All right. We've had that conversation. If you're listening on the radio, it's on Zoom. We're going to post that later. 1-866-408-7669. We'll finish up this hour in just a moment. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
There seems to be a disconnect between the younger generation and some of the newly elected Democrats and yours. Do you believe that the party has confidence in you to continue to serve as its leader? And as somebody who is influential in helping Biden's decision to step aside, do you think it might be time for you to?
No. I think that, you know, my Senate caucus, first, you ask who's the leader. When we don't have a president, there are a lot of leaders. We have a lot of really strong talent in the Senate, in the House, in the governors. We have a great bench. Mm-hmm. But as for the Senate caucus, of which I'm the leader, I should be the leader.
Really? Well, put it this way. If you shouldn't or shouldn't be the leader, this last decision shouldn't decide it. It was amazing how so many people turned on you. But I tell you, almost everybody I know on the left side, outside John Fetterman and maybe a congressman from Minnesota, said that Joe Biden was fine for 4 years. He's robust. He's doing great. Look at how successful. Look at all the legislation he passed. Now we find out he worked out 2 hours a day, didn't do anything. Otto Penn signed all the legislation. Who even knows what he was doing, if he even knew what was happening? Usually Otto Penn works when you're too busy. Guy wasn't even working. Wasn't even capable. And now all of a sudden people are writing books about it. So if Schumer's telling you, we have no leader, but I'm still in charge. How do you believe anything he says? How do you believe what Adam Schiff ever said? The guy's a professional liar. So this is Senator Schumer trying to find out why everybody's turned on him so quickly and where they should go. They want to fight Trump? All right. What's your idea on Medicare? What's your idea on Social Security? How do we build up defense? How do we get the deficit down? How many times do you hear Donald Trump is trying to pass legislation to benefit his billionaire friends? We already know that's not true. So stop it, because he's a billionaire and he has friends. Doesn't mean he's there to help his billionaire friends. Nancy Pelosi, she's also showing concern. Cut 27.
I'm concerned about the next time. I'm concerned about the future. What happened last week was last week. We're going into the future. And this morning, Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer joined in this kind of an event in New York, where Hakeem said that he had confidence in Chuck Schumer. So we're to the next stage on this now.
Really? She wants to move on while still criticizing Chuck Schumer, saying that you should never give away anything for nothing. Cut 26.
I myself don't give away anything for nothing. And I think that's what happened the other day. We could have, in my view, perhaps gotten them to agree to a third way, which was a bipartisan CR for 4 weeks, in which we could have had bipartisan legislation to go forward. They may not have agreed to it, but at least the public would have seen they're not agreeing to it. And that, then they would have been shutting government down.
She's so oblivious and so out of touch. She does not understand. The public doesn't want a three-week drama center. There were 3 more weeks of shut down the government, not shut down the government. There was no benefit to waiting. So if Republicans go, no, we're not going to go for a 3 week CR, then we go back and forth. It ruins your weekend. Going, you know, 12 o'clock midnight, there's still no deal. The Republicans say, we watch Chuck Schumer cave again. And Republicans, well, they walked away from a 3 week deal with no benefit to them. No, there was no option. He knew. The guys hadn't been off for 12 weeks because Thune has kept him in. Because either working through the weekend or beyond, because he wanted those nominations passed, did it. And now they were looking for a weekend off after 12 straight weeks. And there was no sense of dragging it out when they knew it was going to be the same result. So looking where the Democrats are right now, whatever you think of Trump, he knows exactly where he's doing, where he's going. He's got the party behind him. Can anybody argue that? You cannot. Here's Howard Enten on CNN. Cut 28. Then I'll get the calls.
Why are Democrats full of despair? All I have to say, Democrats, call your office. You know, we're March Madness times. Terrible, terrible, terrible. To quote the great Charles Barkley, view Democratic Party favorably. CNN SRS, look at this, 29%. NBC News, you want to go lower than that? How about 27%? Both are record lows, the lowest going back to 1992 in CNN polling, the lowest going back on record to 1990 in NBC News polling. The majority of Americans hold an unfavorable or negative view of the Democratic Party at this point. All I can say is I'm a big fan of the oldies, so I'm going to quote Chubby Checker, how low can you go?
Tony in WABC, real quick, Tony, what do you think? You talking about Ukraine.
Ukraine, and I am a student of history, as you are, Brian. And when I look at Ukraine, I say, what do they want first and what do they want second? I think of history, World War II, when after World War II, the Marshall Plan reorganized, rebuilt Europe. And that was a joke because everything went to Russia. I think now we need to approach this with President Trump and build on it and do like a plan for. First of all, we talked about sovereignty just a week or so ago.
Right.
Ukraine wants its land, Brian, and I think that that's going to take Europe and a coalition with NATO.
They're not going to be able to push the Russians back, but holding in place is possible.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're here. Brian Kilmeade, 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, 15th floor. If you manage to get a pass into the building. Martha McCallum will be joining me this hour, and Bill Hemmer. They once worked together. Can they come back together again just for you here at Fox News headquarters? And, of course, we have TV studios. We have podcasts rolling. If you ever want to catch the podcast, and I know you do, wherever you get them, you'll find us. Also, BrianKilmeadeShow.com, you can click on that, and hopefully you'll do it. And if you ever want to watch the show live as it's streamed, and if you have the app, click on the headsets, listen, or you can look, click on watch, and you just page over until you see us, because we're constantly streaming, also streaming on Fox Nation. Speaking of Fox Nation, Saturday night I'll be live in St. Louis at the Factory. KTFK will be there. We'll have all Mark Cox and Mark Reardon will be among the people that will be joining us on stage. And we'll have a great time. It's history, liberty, and laughs. And it's all unscripted, but it's well-rehearsed, and it'll be fun. It's whatever you think, it's better than you think. And hope to see you in person. And then on the 21st of June, so that's Saturday night, 21st of June will be in Dayton, Ohio. WHIO listeners, pay attention. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Why are Democrats full of despair? CNNSRS, 29%. NBC News, you want to go lower than that? How about 27%? The majority of Americans hold an unfavorable or negative view of the Democratic Party at this point.
Howard Enten, Harry Enten, pointing out how bad things look for Democrats. It's not spin. They know it. I've never seen them fighting with each other like it. But as Gavin Newsom learns from Tim Walz, they think their best offense is challenging to a fight.
Number two.
You have a lot of guns pointing at each other, and a ceasefire without going a little bit further would have been tough. We had a great call. It lasted almost 2 hours, talking about a lot of things and toward getting it to peace. And we talked about other things also.
Yep, here we go. A 90-minute call with Vladimir Putin, little accomplished, as Putin says, I'll agree not to bomb their energy sector and then bomb their energy sector.
Number one.
I want to know more when it comes to the deportations, because deporting illegal immigrants who have committed crimes, I understand that.
Shouldn't be an issue.
So why are folks fighting about gang members being sent away? Like, there are some other deportation cases I'm sure they could be fighting about.
That is Charlemagne the God. Fair enough. That's how I feel, Charlemagne. Judge Fair is with slowing everything down with the Trump agenda. Injunctions. How many injunctions have stopped different things that Donald Trump is trying to do? 64. How many did George Bush face? 6. I think 14 for Barack Obama. 64. It's judge fair. We can't stop him. We can't put him in jail. We can't bankrupt him. We can't stop him from being reelected, getting the nomination. But we can try to slow down his agenda through these Biden, Obama, Clinton judges. And it's sickening. What am I talking about? Well, Donald Trump wants to ship out 261 illegal aliens who have committed crimes, known gang members. And then we have a judge trying to stop it. Trying to stop it. Well, you better not turn that plane around. We want to review who's on that plane. No, it's none of your business. Look at what's here. This is what the government did. This is where ICE was worked out. This is what Marco Rubio has done with El Salvador. That should be it. Donald Trump outraged by the fact that they're stopping future planes from going to El Salvador, Venezuela, or anywhere else. Cut to.
Do you have faith that the Supreme Court ultimately will rule in your favor?
I do. Because the job of getting people out of our country that are murderers, that are absolutely the worst people, the drug lords, are causing such problems in this country. You know, drug lords came in, the biggest of them. They left other countries to come in here. They came through an open border. They're making millions of dollars destroying people's lives, killing people. And that's a presidential thing. We're supposed to be getting them out or getting them brought to justice. We had a judge. I would call him a rogue judge. You can call him whatever you want. I know nothing about him.
So this judge says, I don't want you finding these people out. Well, tough. Well, who asked you? Well, there was a court case filed by the ACLU and a group called Democracy Now that said there's some groups of people that don't belong in this mix, and we don't like that they're shipping them to other people without giving them to other countries, without giving them their due process. Well, forget it. Judge says, stop. And we say, no, the plane's already gone. So then they say, come to court on Monday. Comes to court, and he has five questions. They answer him. And then they says, come tomorrow, meaning today. Answer these questions. What time did the plane leave? When did it leave U.S. airspace? What time did it land in a foreign country? What time were individuals subject solely to the proclamation transferred out of the U.S. custody? Because they want to match it up with FlightAware and see if the plane was actually in the sky or the second plane was actually in the sky. Enough. Some district judge who Barack Obama appointed, whose wife's a radical lefty supporting Hillary Clinton, imagine worship Joe Biden and his diminished faculties. Now, all of a sudden, they want to become famous. And Truth Social says, if a president doesn't have the right to throw murderers and criminals out of the country because of a radical left lunatic judge wants to assume the role of president, then our country is in big trouble. Yeah. And now we've got to work it up the court system. To President Trump's credit, he is showing a lot more patience. They're waiting for him to say, I'm ignoring all the judges. They're waiting. And he hasn't yet. But I'll tell you what, I'm getting close to thinking that he should do it, because this is so out of bounds. And if they say something like this, you just got to show me who these people are before you ship them out. Now, I don't know why you got to trust with go to a district court judge who's their judge shopping to do this, but just go show. Two assaults, strangled these people to death. These are the birthmarks. These are the rape marks. Go ahead, show them some horrific photos. Stephen Miller is outraged by this. Cut 9.
This is settled law. Alien Enemies Act has been on the books and has been upheld for over 200 years. And by the way, the fact that it's a 200-year-old law makes it stronger. This was adopted by the founding generation of our country. The people who wrote the Constitution wrote this law because they understood when America is being invaded by a hostile power, the president is at the height of his authorities to turn back that invasion. Tren de Aragua is arguably the most ruthless, violent, menacing gang now designated as
and most of them are TDA, some were MS-13, which were founded in El Salvador. I also think it's important, too, that there's a lot of logical people out there who say, really? Are you going to bat for those guys in unitards being chain ganged onto a plane and back to El Salvador to face maximum security? Do you know what some of the things they've done? You know how bad those gangs are? Have you talked to anyone in Aurora, New York City, Chicago, or Philadelphia, how bad they are? Charlemagne the God on The Breakfast Club. I don't really think that he will ever vote for a Republican, but he's a logical guy. Cut 8.
I want to know more when it comes to the deportations, because deporting illegal immigrants who have committed crimes, I understand that.
Shouldn't be an issue.
So why are folks fighting about gang members being sent away? Like, there are some other deportation cases I'm sure they could be fighting about, like folks who've been in this country for a long time, not committing no crimes, paying taxes, but have gotten caught up in the process. Those are folks they should be fighting for. Why are they raising hell about a gang being deported?
I don't know. I don't know why they're taking any of the positions they're taking. We're pro-Palestinian, Syrian-born Palestinian, pushing Hamas's effort and anti-Semitism sentiment over in Colombia. You're for the guy in ICE custody right now who never, in my mind, if you are 26 years old with no definitive academic history in London, working for a nonprofit, how do you get into Colombia? I know people that have 103 averages at private elite institutions in high school that never get into any Ivy League school? Why are they even accepting people with dicey backgrounds and thousands of Chinese on transcripts and manuscripts that we can't verify? When are these institutions going to be for Americans? Instead, you get foreigners, who knows who's supporting them, who have a political agenda, and it's not to make Columbia a better academic institution. All this stuff is obvious. When we come back, Martha McCallum will join me, preview her show and the story. Bill Hemmer just wrapped up 2 hours on America's Newsroom. He'll be here this hour, too. And then we'll find out if there's more to know. And I see you up there on the phones. A lot going on. Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is what Donald Trump does in life, right? And you see him exploring the threshold of ignoring a court order.
The issue that's at stake here is the idea that perhaps this administration actually ignored a judicial order. That is deeply disturbing.
We live in a society of rule of law. Supreme Court has its power. Judges have their power. And it should frighten every American, whether you're conservative or progressive, that you have a president who does not respect our Constitution and wants more and more power for himself.
Well, that is Bernie Sanders. He says the same stuff, just different way every day. Martha McCallum here.
Hi, guys.
Her show begins at 3 o'clock Eastern time. And we were just talking off air, what we're going to talk about on air, is 64 injunctions been filed against Trump and his agenda, not personally. And the last one was stopping these TDA guys from being flown to El Salvador in some MS-13.
Yeah.
And this district judge is demanding to count of, well, could you have really turned that plane around?
Don't we want them to come back? I'm looking for a single neighbor, friend, family member who is rising up and saying, wait, that guy lives on my block?
My buddy.
He's a great guy. He works at the hardware store.
He's on my travel soccer team.
Not one person that I have, you know, seen anywhere is speaking out to say they took the wrong guy. They only took a little over 200 individuals. It's a manageable list of people to get a good sense of, like, absolutely. He's getting on the plane. So unless we learn otherwise that somebody was sent on that plane who's a good, upstanding American citizen, I think that most people think that this is on very strong ground. And as we were saying in the break, this time around, the first Trump presidency, it was all personal attacks, right? Russia, he had relationships with, you know, Russia that were unseemly, and all of these stories about the hotel and all of this stuff that ended up falling apart under its own weight. This time, it's about policy. It's about the power of the executive branch to protect the people of the country. So I think that the administration probably does and should welcome these pushbacks, because what they do is they force into the American debate how strong is the presidency? Do these things hold up under pressure? And I think most of them really will, actually, based on, you know, the attorneys that I've spoken to that understand the Constitution. So I think that we're on good ground here. We're testing all of these bureaucratic behemoths, you know, the funding for them. Do they hold up? Can you just cancel it? Jimmy Carter created the USAID, pulled it out of the State Department. Now they put it back in the State Department at a smaller level. So why is this an outrage for American people across the country? Do you hear anybody outraged about this? No.
Right. Well, there are some people who are outraged, but not like the everyday average people. The people in the State Department are outraged. People that work
USAID. The bureaucracy goes down screaming. But that is understood.
And Martha, this is what happens when you put a president back in office who's been there for 4 years.
Right.
Now he went from, how the hell does this place work, to, I know exactly how this place works, and he's undoing it in real time, and they can't really handle it. Plus, they can't even say he wasn't really elected. The popular vote, every battleground state.
Yeah, improving, which is why he makes that point over and over.
But I don't even blame him. He's got to remind people.
And no, I don't either. It's an important point to make when you talk about the things that he's doing, all of which he meticulously outlined over and over and over again during the election. So he is following through on his campaign promises.
So you don't see anything different about our system now when they tell you that basically half of the injunctions since 1960 have been filed against Trump when George Bush had six.
Yeah.
Barack Obama had 16. So you don't worry about the system.
Clearly the judicial system is fired up against Trump. It's been that way, you know, since he first came on the scene. On the other hand, I would just point out that he's the volume of stuff that he is throwing at them is so much larger. Biden wasn't nearly as active. There wasn't any meat for them to chew over in the judicial system because there wasn't a whole lot happening, okay, except for why didn't they stand up in outrage about the student loan program, right?
Absolutely.
And people did across the country. People were very upset about that, and I think that's one of the reasons that we saw the pushback to that. But again, these are policy. I think in many cases, some of these cases, they want these cases to go all the way to the Supreme Court, and they want them to decide. The Supreme Court, I think, is resisting. They can't handle every single one of these things. They can't come out every 3 days and say, this is acceptable under executive branch privilege. This is constitutional. But they will go through and sift out the big cases that need to go before them, and I think it will be important for the country.
I'll give you an example. In the EPA, you have a new guy in charge, new administration in power. And a judge has barred Trump's EPA from taking back $20 billion in climate grants. The ruling orders the climate change groups to return to court to argue about the fate of the money.
Yep.
So, and guess who the U.S. judge is? The district judge, Tanya Chutkan. Does that sound familiar?
Yep.
The same one that's so frustrated that they weren't able to convict Donald Trump. And she would have. You know that.
Look, I mean, you know, you've heard the talk about the administrative state. It does not go down without screaming and yelling. These institutions have grown and grown and grown. This is why the real estate industry has been so strong for the past two decades in Washington, D.C. and the outlying areas, because these bureaucracies have been ballooning. So they are not going to go down without a fight. This EPA story, I've talked to Lee Zeldin about it several times.
You'll talk to him today, too?
I anticipate that we will. I'm waiting for him to confirm. I'm looking at my schedule right now. But $20 billion pushed out the door at the last minute in the Biden administration to different banks to hold the money and to lock it out of, you know, so it couldn't go back into the coffers. And, you know, we did the story about Stacey Abrams, a group that she was affiliated with, got some of this money. That group
billions.
Had $200 in revenue the year before, $100 actually, I think. And then they got billions to fight climate change. So they were trying to lock up this money. And this is a really important story, following all this money. Where was it going? Whose pockets was it going into? So, yeah, I'm not surprised that they're trying to claw it back. But I think this is the debate that we want to be having, and we need to be covering it, which, of course, we are.
Why do you? I mean, do you ever take a step back and think where the anger comes at Tesla's Elon Musk? Have you thought, you know, were in the middle. It's unbelievable.
But it's more simple than anything. It's all about Trump. Good ideas that used to be good ideas on both sides of the fence, right? Obama, Clinton, Hillary Clinton as well, you know, about more efficient government, cutting spending, all these ideas that are happening now. DOGE is government efficiency. This has been talked about by Democrat and Republican presidents. Did they ever get it done? No. I mean, Clinton and Gore got some of it done, a little piece. But if you're inside the government, I think it's almost impossible. It's almost impossible to cut down on this bureaucracy. But now you see Elon Musk actually doing it. The only difference is that he backed Trump. And it's like it's a red line of Trump derangement. If he supports something, it must be bad. And Democrats are not, just real quick, Democrats are not going to gain their strength back until they pick a few issues and say, you know what, we're on the same page on this. We all are. This is good for the country.
So Ro Khanna was in here yesterday, and he said, well, we would like to be a part of DOGE. Why does he lock us out? I think it's absolutely necessary, because if you bring a politician in, Republican or Democrat, they're going to say, I can't close that base.
Exactly.
I can't close that program.
That's
These
right.
people got me elected. But what's better for the country? Well, it's not important. I got elected. So you got to keep politicians out of it.
I know, but Ro Khanna should come forward with his five things he wants to cut billions of dollars in.
Right. I'm sure it will be something that Silicon Valley would absolutely love. Martha McCallum, don't move.
the fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back. And Martha McCallum and Bill Hemmer here. And it looks like there's somewhat of a rift. Bill gave a very big hello, and Martha just kept looking down.
What's going on? Working.
Eric, stay close.
Something.
This could get out of control.
And I just saw Bill a few minutes ago. We were just on set together on his show. Oh. Yeah. So we had already said good morning.
I had no idea if you stayed in contact.
Well, yeah, actually, we were giving the side eye to you.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I misinterpreted. We were just talking about, I don't want to spend the whole time on this, but we were talking about that full screen you had on the injunctions on 6 for George Bush. And there was 14 for Barack Obama,
yes.
64 for Donald Trump. And Martha thinks it's not a bad thing because it's good to test the system.
Well, I'm just saying the torrent of stuff that's coming at these judges, they have much more to chew on than they have in prior administrations, certainly, where not a whole lot was happening. But I think that in some ways, with some of these cases, the administration wants to test it. Right. Push it in front of them and have them determine that actually it is upheld in the executive power. It does fall under the national security obligation of the president of the United States to return people who are belong to a terrorist organization and eject them from the country. So I think some of these are going to actually help them make their case. I think it's part of the process.
I don't disagree. I think Trump sees it as competition.
He's not upset. He doesn't seem angry.
He's just going to push it as far as he can. He's going to be able to get away with what he can get away. My theory on the case for the flights on Friday night is thus. They knew when they enacted this 1798 rule on Friday night that it was going to take a while to get a judge, to get this in front of a judge. And the planes were already fueled up and ready to go. And they knew they had an ally on the receiving end of it. In El Salvador.
Mm-hmm.
And they also knew that he was ready with all of his soldiers.
And his cameras.
I love the cameras.
Because they knew the images would go viral.
100%.
And they weren't going to blow the opportunity. So I guess in the last hour they said, we need more time to give you answers on the questions that you have. Questions being what time did the plane take off, when were you out of U.S. airspace, all that stuff. But I think this was an operation that was set in motion. They wanted to make sure that it happened. And Trump's an image guy. He wants to take those images and flood them all across America and all around the world to let you know how you're going to be treated. I think that was a strategy. One more thing. These district courts, I had no idea. Do you know how many district judges there are in America?
How many? I don't even know.
677.
At that level. Yeah.
Plus others that have seniority.
So they're going to be conducting our foreign policy?
I had no idea.
Are they going to be doing our foreign policy?
I don't know, but I just had no idea that there was that number in the judicial level of the United States.
That can,
but see, to me, this is not a hard one. What I thought was, if you want to go ahead and make sure that 261 are actually TDA or that type, that vile and deserved, you want to go do that? If there's a system for that to make sure ICE didn't arrest the wrong person, interrogate the wrong person, and go ahead and charge the wrong person, you want to go, if there's a system you want to work through, go do it. But to stop it, turn the plane around as a district judge, really? Do we have enough gas to do that? Yeah. Where are we landing? You going to clear the airfield for us? And now that all of a sudden, I worry about this. Like, Martha, I think, and the president's like you, he's laid back about it. I worry about, this is such an extreme example. I never thought a district court judge would make a stand here. The other stuff, when you talk about dissolving the Department of Education and things like that, this worries me. Because this, to me, is such an extreme example. So many people are like, are we going to bat for TDA? Really?
Yeah.
So I worry about if you're going to stop that, that means everything's going to be gummed up. We're not going to get anything done.
I think that what we're learning is the policy is that it's better to ask forgiveness than permission. And they are in go-go mode. Just do it, right? And we will answer to the judge later. We'll figure this out. I do not believe that the American people care at all. I think they want these people ejected from the country. And as I said before, if there's a neighbor or a friend who says, this guy is really a good guy, and they determine that definitively, we can always bring him back. As for the Department of Education, these departments were created, most of them late in the American process. They can be eliminated. And of course, the court's going to get involved in these issues. Of course they are. Mm-hmm. But I believe that in most cases, the executive power will come out.
We had a guy on our show yesterday, and I said, how do you determine that they're TDA? He says it's getting more and more difficult. He said when MS-13 was spreading in 2017, 2018, they had the tattoo on their chest. Mm-hmm. He says that was an easy identifier. But they've gotten smarter, they've changed their ways, and it's becoming more difficult to find and identify them. I'll say this. You watch that video as a man, it hurts when your facial hair is shaved without shaving cream. And you saw that guy on his knees? Mm-hmm. That's right. Pain.
And you know how much pain logically he probably inflicted on other people, but he is in pain. They're getting their hair cuts and they got to go into solitary for a year. And the others are going to go to prison for the rest of their life. Yeah. El Salvador, 60 minutes in a big feature.
I've been to those jails in San Salvador.
Not because of you. You were visiting
as
a reporter.
I was there with Bill Barr. Guys, can I tell you that you know what you can't sense from the video is how hot it is, how humid it is, how many mosquitoes are in the air, and these are open-air cages. And I mean, the time that they displayed them, there's like 30 guys to a cage.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, they're chained
it's
up all day long.
It's a good incentive to behave yourself.
Like maybe for an hour a day they're able to stretch their bodies, then they go back into it. This particular prison, however, is well outside of town. I don't know if you've seen the aerials of it.
It's enormous.
It's enormous.
30 to 40,000 people it holds,
exactly.
Right?
Yes.
Let's talk about Russia if we can. It looks like... Now I found out from talking to Cliff May an hour ago, Mike Waltz says it was only 5-minute delay for President Trump. That's not true that he was left an hour. So he was surprised about the whole story. But what Cliff May just said, that Steve Witkoff was left outside in Russia for 9 hours as he talked to the Belarusian president, that was not a common knowledge. I was looking everywhere. I couldn't find 9 hours.
Going to see Putin.
He was with Lushenko. Belarus for 9 hours prior. What's the emergency there? That's a vassal state. So as we see what emerged is, here's take some prisoners back and don't hit energy sites. Your thoughts, I guess, Martha, about what was accomplished yesterday?
So I think the positive way to look at it is that it's just beginning. The process is just beginning. But it's pretty clear that Putin is not in a highly negotiable mood. And even during the first phase of this with Zelensky, they kept saying, we're not going to allow any European troops on the ground in Ukraine. That's not going to happen.
Non-starter.
That's not going to happen. And we insist that the military is at a very small level in Ukraine and a level that we agree to. They want to put a stranglehold on this country. They want to make sure that it never joins NATO. And they want to make sure that it's not a mini NATO. Like, to them, if you put European troops on the ground, it might as well be a NATO country.
I agree with that. We're closer, a lot closer to A than we are to Z. So, like, closer to the beginning than the end. I don't know what Trump does. Does Trump flood the zone? You know, when you get off a conversation like that, and if Witkoff was stood up the way he was, how does that sit with you? Probably not well. Does he amp up the weapons? Mm-hmm. Does that lead you to a better result? I'm not sure.
This could lead to World War III, and no one wants that.
I read two fascinating things this past week. You've got a land border that's about 700 miles long for the front line. There are parts of this border that stretch for 10 miles, a 10-mile no-go zone, meaning that if you're with the Ukrainian military or the Russian military or the North Koreans in this case, you can't move because the drones, their coverage is so intense that they'll detect you immediately. Even then, if you're able to negotiate a ceasefire, an armistice, or some sort of
pause,
or capitulation. How do you defend that border? It's 700 miles long. The damage is already done. Both sides hate each other more with greater intensity than ever before in their history. This is a huge challenge. There is no easy way to figure this out, and. I mean, with all the talent and Trump and Waltz and Witkoff and Rubio, I don't know. I agree with your point. Putin is hell-bent on winning and does not care about the destruction. The other thing I learned this week, the North Korean soldiers are getting better, and they're fighting in Kursk. There was a line of the Wall Street Journal where these guys crawled through a non-operating natural gas pipeline, and they did it. In that town in Kursk that was fought over for the last week. Mm-hmm. And they popped out on the other side, and they cut off the retreating Ukrainian soldiers. And a number of these North Korean soldiers died from methane poisoning from the gas line. blew me away.
Wow.
These guys, they're sent half a continent away. They don't speak the language. They can't read the alphabet. The food sucks. And they're crawling through gas pipelines to fight an enemy they have no beef with. That is one terrible way to go.
Right. I mean, and they were a cannon fodder in the beginning. And they just would go straight ahead and have no idea about drone technology or things to that nature. But how the North Koreans, I mean, the fact is they're taking Chinese dual-use weapons. They need Iranian weapons, drones especially, the Shahed drones or missiles. And now they have North Korean troops, and they're going into Yemen, and they're recruiting out of Yemen. So this is a country of 150 million who can't even staff an army because they've lost so many, and at least a million people have left the country because they want no part of this war. So on some level, when the doors close, as evil as Vladimir Putin is, does he say, I got an off-ramp here, and do I want to alienate the guy that actually is talking to
That's
me
a great point.
For three and three-quarter years?
He's not there yet.
Putin isn't.
No.
I mean, you know, when you look back, I look back at this 2007, I think, speech by Putin about basically diminishing American power. That is the goal of all of these entities that are involved in this fight. I just wonder, at some point, do we realize what a distraction all of this is from what's happening in China? And is there a decision that that is the more important battle, the more important place for us to be? And do we ultimately walk away from this fight? It's very difficult to solve. The other just side point that I was reading about this week that I think is so fascinating, I think that what we've watched in between Russia and Ukraine is the last trench warfare in history. When you see these advances of these drones and what they're able to do, we are looking at the future of warfare
robots,
in this zone in a way.
Drones.
Absolutely. Little things that look like dogs that go, you know, you used to have to get into the trees in a place where you could hide to do reconnaissance, to see where the enemy was. You're not doing that anymore. So the early stage of this, the trench warfare looked like World War I. The later stage looks like the future of warfare in the world.
We're going to find out if you need to know more. And Martha, you're exclusively going to let our listeners know who's going to be on your show. Is that true?
Absolutely. You'll get a scoop.
Can Bill hear too?
I hope so.
Yes.
Back in a moment.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
All right, we are back. Martha and Bill are here. Martha, I don't want to lose this opportunity to find out what's going to be on your show. I'm being a little selfish.
So we were talking, one of my favorite stories was the whistleblowers from the IRS who felt that they had felonious activity from the Bidens that was, you know, not worth the squeeze. The juice wasn't worth the squeeze. So now Joseph Ziegler is going to be a Treasury official. So it's a vindication, and we're going to speak with him. We've had him on a lot, and we're going to talk to him today. I'm looking forward
Martha
to
it. Martha is in what I call the hot zone of cable news.
Yeah, it's pretty, mid-afternoon, pretty hot
man,
lately.
Just keep the plates up in the air.
I know, and then Trump's,
a lot going
you never
on.
Know when he's going to take over.
A lot going on. It's great.
And all right, Bill, you're not jealous of that guest, are you?
I'll be watching.
Okay, good.
And learning.
All right, so here's what I'm more to know. I just got to ask you this.
Yes.
I never even thought this was an issue. Are you honest with your dentist? It turns out a majority of Americans are not. 60% confess to wanting to impress their dentist during office visits. 57% lie about their hygiene. 48% believe their dentist can see right through their lies. And 64% feel guilty about their dishonesty. Bill Hemmer, do you lie to your dentist?
I'm down on dentists. I don't lie to my dentist, but I do floss every day.
So do I.
And
that's what they're lying about.
One of the only things in this world that you cannot Google, even with AI, is the opinion of a dentist about something in your mouth that
really?
You can't see.
Martha?
I think what people are lying about is flossing, and I'm with Bill. I floss every single day. So, no, I do not lie to my dentist. And they can see if there's plaque on your teeth. I don't think that any lie is going to convince them otherwise.
So get this. Coffee houses are the hot new first date place. They say that it's a safe place to be. The New York Post quotes one 26-year-old says, it's less of a commitment, especially meeting someone for the first time. Going out to dinner is just too much pressure.
No way.
Whereas you go to the coffee date, this goes very well. It's springboard to other things.
I'm okay with it. I think Martha's going to take the other side.
I remember someone asking me out for coffee once. I was like, coffee? That's so boring. Take me out for dinner or a drink. I'm not going out for coffee.
Martha, the thing is, did you want to go out with him?
It turned me off that he went. I was like, you're really boring. No, thank you.
I think there's some cool spots in New York where you can.
There are, for sure.
Good spot.
Okay, here's the
problem. I guess if you want that barrier of protection and you're not sure you like the person, maybe coffee's okay.
Remember, like, it's just lunch? Isn't there like a.
Whatever happened, it's just lunch.
So I think this is the problem. Hey, how you doing? Great to meet you. What's your name? Great. Nice to meet you. Like, look great. I want to get in a line. What do you want, a latte? Then you're gone for 15 minutes. And then you come back. And like, do you get another one? I can't really have two once it's done.
Right.
The other thing, I was talking to Carly Shimkus about this. Not that we like to get drunk, but it's such a shame that people are drinking less now and going to bars less. There's nothing better than going to a bar. You see a flat screen up there at 7 o'clock.
So
it's Friday.
I know.
Even before you take your first sip, isn't it
fun?
I don't believe any of this stuff. The kids don't go out anymore.
Kids don't go out.
I'm not buying that.
What do you mean, Bill?
Come to my neighborhood, man. It's just crawling on the weekends.
Well, I don't
it's
know.
Active.
I have three in their 20s, and like they go out a couple of them more than others, but it's not like it used to be. Like we went out every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Thursday was like the beginning of the weekend.
Right.
Sometimes Sunday.
We went out all the time.
But what's healthier? Like, I don't know if they graduate. For example, people used to smoke all the time. Now they smoke less. Okay, that's good. But now they're drinking less. I'm thinking, really? I mean, you could go out and get a Guinness Zero.
I think people smoke less, but I think they drink the same amount, if not more. By the way, this is Lent, so I am on the wagon.
Yes. He's
really?
Always why on the wagon during Lent.
Because it's hard. That's why.
Right.
I'll tell you why. You lose weight. You become enormously more productive.
So it's really beneficial for you.
Everything in New York is 50% off.
What do you mean?
So you, three for three. The bill comes and it's half the price that
because
it used to
be.
Because
he's not drinking
not paying
at
for an
dinner.
$18 cocktail.
This is what I found out. The next generation, it's not that they're mature to get drunk. They're getting high or having gummies.
Totally.
There's nothing less socializing than getting high.
Let's go out and get a gummy together.
Right.
It's terrible.
Get a gummy together.
Alcohol is much more social, but I think they are coming after alcohol in a huge way.
Why?
It's going to have labels on it. Now they're saying no amount of wine is safe. No amount of alcohol is safe. It used to be like, you know, a glass of red wine every day actually makes you healthier. No more.
Martha,
they are coming after alcohol in a big way.
West Virginia is set to implement the biggest crackdown on junk food in history.
Yeah.
West Virginia.
That's okay.
I'm okay with that.
All right.
Let's get healthy.
Yeah. Obviously, you don't invest in ringdings. All right. No yodels in the portfolio.
No bugles.
Right? No Twinkies in the McCallum fortune.
Absolutely. No. Hey, there never were.
Don't forget, Saturday night, where you're going to be, St. Louis.
That's
History
right.
of the Ring Left live on Fox Nation.
Yay.
BrianKilmeade.com.
This week on the Brett Baer Podcast, my all-star panel weighs in on the top stories at home and abroad. Fox News contributor Katie Pavlich, Fox News senior congressional correspondent Chad Pergram, and host of the Richard Fowler Show, Richard Fowler.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.